Hanley, Navar, Terrio, myself, Larson. Are we 1, 2, 3, 4?
Two out of 10.
5, 6, we have our quorum, we're able to conduct business. On the agenda today, we have two overviews, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and the Department of Revenue. And then one bill is back before us, House Bill 18, Fees for Police Protection by States. And then we had also held Senate Bill 19, the Crime of Conspiracy, in committee, in case anyone wanted to move today, that we reconsider our action of having moved the bill from committee. So that's where we are. And at this time, then, we'd like to recognize General Cox from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and give the committee an overview on his department and to give the committee an opportunity to ask any questions they may have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the staff handed out some pieces of paper there for you to look at. Some I'll be referring directly to. And with the chair's permission, when we go in to answer some of the questions that you and Representative McLean ask, I'd like to bring Jeff Morrison forward and address the increments, decrements, and the position changes, if that's all right.
Very good.
Thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee a department and budget overview. I have with me today my Director of Administrative Support Services Division, Jeff Morrison, who's also my budgeteer, and Mr. Irv Martin, who's the Director of Emergency Services in my department. I know, looking at the members that are here today, you don't need much of a refresher on what our department is about, so I won't go into any details at all except to remind you that we have the responsibility for the Army Guard, the Air National Guard, Veterans Affairs, and Emergency Services. And I'll say the same thing that I've said in many past hearings, about the fact that we are heavily dependent upon federal dollars, and to bring you up to date on what our status is in that regard for fiscal 94 to use as a benchmark. We're expecting somewhere on the order of $150 million in federal funds for the Department, National Guard, Air Guard, and Emergency Services. And to earn those federal dollars, we're asking the legislature to provide approximately $7,634,000. We like to think of this as revenue generation. Of course, it's not revenue generation into the general funds of the state. We realize this. It is revenue generation into the pockets of Alaskans and their businesses and institutions. And if you would agree with me that is a good analogy, if you do the math on those figures I just mentioned to you, the state gets a $19 payback for every dollar that they put into my department for those vital services provided by those functions. I think you get a lot of money for our department. In fact, as you'll recall, last year when we had the reception for the legislature, we our motto then, as it is now, is adding value to Alaska. Of course, we're not talking about value just in terms of dollars. We're talking about what the department does to add value to Alaska, but what those dollars contribute to the state in the form of the services performed and the fact that we are here, especially as far as the National Guard is concerned. But, of course, those functions, to get a little bit more specific, are to provide trained military personnel and equipment to protect the lives and the property of Alaskans, both as far as the state mission is concerned and the federal mission should the nation go to war. Our veteran service officers who work to secure primarily the federal benefits accrued to them. We have over 70,000 veterans in the state, which is worth about $15 million in services that are provided to them each year as a payback, if you will, for the Veteran Service Officer Program that goes out and helps these individual veterans receive the benefits they're due from the federal treasury. And of course, for emergency services, we provide the expert emergency planners and managers who help prepare all sectors of the state. And I underline that, all sectors of the state, because of our work with local entities, whether they be villages or municipalities or boroughs, to cope with disaster and calamity of the magnitude of last week's Los Angeles earthquake. These functions of the department are vital services, and we're able to provide Alaskans this because of our heavy federal funding. But with this considerable federal funding, of course, comes the obligation for the state to furnish an appropriate share from state revenue. And of course, that's why I'm here today, to ask you to support the state's appropriate share in the form of what the department needs to carry out the obligations that accrue as a result of receiving lots of federal dollars. In fact, if you look at it from the perspective of the state furnishes the dollars for the supervision, management, and expenditure of the federal dollars, then you have an appropriate analogy. Turning now to our 95 budget submission, which I know all of you have before you, it reflects little change over time. And as you'll see in the handout, in fact, we give you a comparison from 82 to 94, 95, and the breakout of the budget for both the National Guard as well as the department as a whole. And you can see the state's contribution has changed very little over time compared to, in the case of the Guard, almost a tripling of the numbers of people and the number of resources and the number of facilities that we have to support. And of course, that is the largest component of the department budget, both in federal funds and state funds. That's the National Guard. And between 82 and 92, the state's portion of that budget has remained relatively constant. And as I say, while the federal portion has tripled, and that represents increased numbers of people as well as facilities. So clearly, we believe that we've continued to do much more with actually less in state dollars, especially when you adjust for inflation. We believe that over time, we've become more effective and more efficient. We realize how important that is in the present climate of shrinking state revenues. I would like to call to your attention in the handouts that we've provided. The one with the colored arrows shows a graphic of the almost $150 million in federal funds that come into the state in that 19-to-1 ratio that I was speaking of. The handouts also have two vertical bar graphs, which I've already referred to for you to take a look at, and you can see those different components and be happy to try to answer any questions you might have on those. The other shows the National Guard operating budget from 82 to 94, and that illustrates the state contribution, which has changed a little over time. And also in the handouts is a list of the 8 major program objectives for the department for the state fiscal year 94-95 to give you an idea of the major activities that we are either presently underway or will shortly be underway. And be happy to answer any questions you might have on those 8 objectives. I'd like now to ask that Jeff Morrison would address some of the specifics that you asked, Mr. Chairman, and okay. The letter that you and Representative McClain signed to us as far as increments, decrements, and we'll be happy to answer any of the questions that we might
have. Thank you. Jeff, if you'd please join us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Morrison, Director of Administrative and Support Services. What I'm going to be referring to, just so you know what I'm walking you through, is this initial handout that also has included in it the graphs that General Cox was just explaining. And I'm just going to address the numbers here that we're talking about. I wasn't sure if your point of reference was going to be FY94 authorized or FY94 adjusted, so I've got both of those up here. And the difference between 94 authorized and 94 adjusted is, as you can see, infinitesimal. It's for general fund, it's just 2,200.
I understand that the difference between the authorized and the adjusted simply has to do with the additional cost of insurance.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, and also there is some additional COLA increases for labor trades and crafts included in there.
I see. Okay.
So I'll speak just for the differences between 94 adjusted and the FY95 request. There's only basically 6 items that we've got here, and many of them do not include general funds. The first major item is that the department and the governor's budget is not requesting any funds for capitalizing the disaster relief fund for FY95. The current balance of the disaster relief fund is just a little over $2.7 million. We've been very fortunate not to have any disasters this year, with the exception of Tanakee and the Department of Natural Resources fire disaster. That tapped us for $1 million. The front section of the budget allows us to carry forward the balance of whatever's in the disaster relief fund from 94 into 95. So we are hopeful that this will enable us to have sufficient funds in 95.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Martin.
Yeah, I was, Mr. Morrison, concerned about that. Sometimes we have in the past cut certain areas where we know that during the interim we can make up for it. And I hope this wasn't a camouflage, knowing that we would always get federal dollars or what general dollars sometimes during the interim for emergencies. What is the average that we have used over the year? I thought it was $6 million of usage for emergencies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, going back approximately 6 or 7 years, we have averaged a little over $6 million. It's in the detailed budget request.
Okay.
However, last year it was considerably less than that, and not counting the fire disaster, the $1 million a year for fire disasters that we've had for at least two out of the last 3 years, you know, it's been less, and it's kind of hard to attribute that to anything. Anyway, this was an administration decision that we would make the best with what we had. And
you don't feel that you're confident that we may not have to call the Budget and Audit Committee to give you more during the interim?
Mr. Chairman, we will not need the Budget and Audit Committee to give us authority for federal funds during the interim. For the last 2 years, we've had $5 million a year that's gone into federal authorization if and when that's needed. And so that's built up a balance that we can draw on for federal funds. But if there's ever a need for general funds, if we have a major, major disaster, then we will definitely be coming in either for the to the entire legislature, or there are provisions in statute that tell us how to go about getting the funds that are needed for responding to a disaster.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Please continue.
The next item on this list is to reduce federal and interagency receipts in the disaster planning and control component. These are funds, the federal funds anyway, that we do not currently receive. This is not a program reduction. This is mainly a budget adjustment to get our federal funds down to what the level is that we can expect to receive them in. This is basically a strategic decision to enable us and enable you to look at the budget numbers based on what we actually believe the federal funds to be, rather than to inflate them as we've done in the past in anticipation of maybe getting some federal funds. So that's that again is basically a non-cut. the next two items.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I have a question.
Chairman McLean.
If we were not to address that, what would be the effect of it if we decided not to fund the GF?
Not to fund the disaster relief
And control.
Oh, we're talking about the disaster relief fund?
Disaster planning and control.
Okay. The particular thing I was addressing was dealing with just federal funds only.
Mm-hmm.
If you did not take that cut in federal funds, we would simply have a surplus of authorized federal funds
that did not receive.
That we're not expecting to receive anyway. So we would probably restrict and defer the revenue and just treat it as if it weren't there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next two items are both items in the disaster planning and control component related to replacing with general funds the reduction or loss of other sources of funds. The first item is a $396,100 reduction in interagency 470 funds that are being replaced with general funds. And the second, and I'll address both of these in more detail in a moment, is a similar amount or similar reason, a reduction of $286,500 in federal funds being replaced with general funds, again in the disaster planning and control component. The philosophy that the governor has supported in this is to recognize that there is a basic organizational infrastructure that's required to be maintained in the Division of Emergency Services. For reasons that the Department of Environmental Conservation has changed their approach on what would be eligible, at least in the administration's view, for reimbursement from the 470 fund. So that accounts for the reduction in the 470 fund support. And the reduction in federal funding support is based on a change, basically an overall reduction in Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, funds that are available to the department. That's part of a national reduction in the FEMA budget. It's reducing not only the amount of FEMA funds available, but also the matching requirements. So in both of those cases, in order to maintain the organizational infrastructure, we're replacing those with general funds. The next item is related to the capital budget, and the governor's capital budget has not yet been submitted to you, so we're not sure whether or not either of the two projects that we've proposed here are going to be in the capital budget, or to what extent. If they are in the capital budget, then these funds would be necessary, in keeping with the direction we understand of showing positions to be funded by the capital budget in the operating budget. But these would be non-permanent project positions associated with the Shaker 4 project, which would be held in October of this year, and then the tsunami warning enhancements, which again, until we have the governor's capital budget, it's difficult to comment on.
Just one comment, Mr. Chairman. In the program objectives for the department, you'll see a short narrative on the Shaker 4 earthquake exercise, which we are hoping to be able to conduct next fall in southeast Alaska to prepare the state for something on the order of a Los Angeles earthquake, and that's what it's referring to, Shaker 4.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin.
So I'd like to move back up, if I may, and explore a little more the use of 470 funds versus general funds, and the other one, planning and control. A lot of times, as you know, we accept monies because they're easily available, and a lot of times we're told by agencies it's just a temporary purpose, and at no time in the future will we need general fund monies. And it's part of my problem, where it's so easy to take federal monies and other monies, and then eventually when it's not there, we get stuck with this unit that's already there, and what are we going to do? And I'm wondering if that's the trouble with the 470 money that we took. Why is it 470 monies are going to keep on coming in unless we misappropriate it in the first place? Is this a legitimate use for 470 money?
Mr. Chairman.
Continue using it.
Yeah, we can probably. I know Mike Conway from Environmental Conservation is here and could possibly address the detail of that. But it's my understanding this is mainly a policy decision supported by the governor, or the OMB anyway, to reduce the overall demand on the 470 funds. It's not that anything is illegal or.
What kind of planning is being conducted under? Under this, that formerly we used 470 funds, now we're going to use general funds, planning for what?
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Irv Martin to address that, please. Irv?
Okay. Mr. Martin? Probably if you two would pull up a chair, please.
And just to add on, what has been accomplished to date so far?
Did you get the question here? Yeah, I guess the question has to do with the planning that was done with the $470 and what has been done to date, and now that it's switched over to general funds, what will be done in the future?
Mr. Chairman, if you remember back to the Oil Spill Commission findings, the Division of Emergency Services is an all-hazards agency. It's not strictly hazardous substances or oil spills. It's virtually every disaster we have has some sort of release, whether it's a flood in Fairbanks or some contamination and pollution. With the pressure and the scrutiny that's on DEC's 470 funds, they felt that it was more appropriate that the Division of Emergency Services have a commitment from the full government of the state to provide that basic infrastructure, which is beyond strictly hazardous substance and oil spill type stuff. After the Exxon Valdez, we reorganized the Division of Emergency Services under the Incident Command System that was mandated by law. And primarily the logistics section, which is dedicated towards the acquisition and of equipment and material to put it in place, actually procure and put our capital projects online. And they would do that for any type of disaster acquisition, not strictly 470 fund related issues or hazardous substance or oil spill type stuff. So DEC felt that there was some grounds for justification in the withdrawal of those funds, and certainly OMB endorsed that concept.
Are there any 470 funds that are still included?
Yes, sir, there are. I believe there's $221,000 in our budget.
Further questions on this subject, Representative Navarre?
Not on that subject, but on disaster relief funding.
Sure.
The reason that we're seeing a reduction in disaster relief funding from last year to this year is that there's a carry forward. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, there's always a carry forward. It's just that at this point in the budget process, the carry forward is substantially higher than it has been in the past. At this point, meaning basically the 1st of February, for the last several years, the balance of the fund has been close to $1 million, maybe even less.
$2.7 million.
Yes,
sir. Mm-hmm. Chairman, and what's going to happen is next year there'll be a very small carry forward, and it'll come in as an increment to the budget in years when we're trying to find additional reductions. So
already
it'd be far wiser for you to lapse the money and come in with a request so that you don't show a reduction this year and an increase next year. Just a little bit of advice for you.
Mr. Chairman, we're trying to be as responsive as we can to a lot of demands on the budget, as I mentioned, the front section of the budget does allow us to carry forward the funds from one year to the next.
Proceed.
Chairman, I know it does, but you come in asking for budget increment next year, I tell you it's going to be difficult. And not because, I mean, I'll remember this argument and everything, and I'll probably make the same argument that we need to fund disaster relief, but disaster relief in the past has been an area of the budget that sometimes we underfund because it makes the budget look smaller, even though it's not a real reduction. And this is a case where it's not really going to be a real reduction. And the legislature needs to recognize that and inform whoever happens to be sitting at this table next year that that's what the case was, if you're not going to do it the other way.
Chairman McLean still had a question.
Yes, I still would like to know what has been accomplished to date with the funding for 470 for disaster planning and control.
Mr. Chairman, what's transpired so far is with the first increment of money that we had dedicated for depots and cores, during Exxon Valdez, we found out that without the communications ability to direct the disbursement of equipment and material, you can have all the boom and absorbent in the world, but it doesn't do any good unless you can communicate where it has to go. So we used $800,000 of the depot and core money from the state, and the federal government matched that with $800,000 for air transportable Earth satellite capability for communication that is deployable in any disaster, any place in the state. And it's deployable on the Air National Guard C-130 aircraft. We're the only state in the nation that has that capability because we're so large and so diverse. Also, with the capital projects on the State Emergency Operations Center, my communications officer and the logistics chief have provided the contract management for the procurement of the equipment to staff that facility and acquire the capability that the Emergency Operational Center is in fact a reality, and it does possess something other than a vacant shell in the basement of the armory. And other than that, they have provided training for hazardous material response to over 1,000 people at the local government level, emergency first responders, primarily firefighters, but also public works and police officers. We are administering the HMTUSA grants from the federal government, which is a Hazardous Material Transportation Uniform Safety Act, and we conduct training to local government officials in SARA Title III, which is a Superfund Amendment Reauthorization Act of 1986.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Martin and Hoffman.
I'd like to get into the second part of that question, next one down, where we're replacing federal receipts with general funds. This is probably more of alarming to me, because so often that we do that with promises that the monies are available, let's use them, or some other state to use them, and there's never be a need for general funds. So here we are, completely 100% replacement. Specifically, what are we replacing with general funds?
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we had this conversation about 8 years ago, and Representative Martin admonished me to practice brinksmanship with my federal counterparts, and we did that quite effectively for the last 8 years. With the demise of the Soviet Union and the reduction of the Department of Defense, there's a corollary reduction in civil defense funding. Programs that we used to receive 100% federal funding was proposed for reduction by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They actually requested 1994 budget to be reduced to 75-25 cost sharing, and 1995 would be a 50-50 cost sharing. The National Association of State Disaster Directors petitioned Congress to restore that funding for last year, but the budget request to Congress this year would reduce the Population Protection Planner, which is the only federally funded for the entire state emergency plan. Prior to my directorship, I was a state population protection planner, and I co-authored the existing state emergency plan. We would also lose the Disaster Preparedness Improvement Grant Planner, which is the program they administer is actually the hazard reduction plans. Every time we have a disaster, there's a federal requirement that you must execute a mitigation plan. You have to analyze what the disaster was, what the costs, the cause of the disaster may have been, and what we can do to either prevent or mitigate it in the future so we don't have a repetition of the same type of events. In addition to that, there's two other positions potentially which would be impacted. I can't remember off the top of my head.
So they'll become state employees now instead of federal.
Mr. Chairman, as General Cox is correct, they are currently state employees. They are paid with federal funds, but they would become state employees.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General, I've had several inquiries, not only from people that are in the Guard, but from people that are that have retired from the Guard this last year, and they're concerned about a change in hiring practices for positions in rural areas of the state. They feel that many of the positions are being filled from people outside the state of Alaska, possibly because of the downplay and the retiring of military throughout the world, and they're concerned that Alaskans and particularly people from the region aren't being recruited and hired, not only in my particular area of the state, but throughout the state of Alaska. And I'm wondering what type if in fact that is true, and what are we doing to encourage and hire Alaskans and particularly people from the region?
The policy in the department, Mr. Hoffman, is to whenever we advertise for a full-time position, no matter where it is in the state, we try to recruit from the state. And we put out a call for applications, and we screen those applications, And in the case where they fit the requirements, that's our preference, to hire locally.
That I guess, is the concern. Some of the requirements they feel are being placed higher and higher. Before, they were able to qualify for the jobs, but they feel that the Guard is making those requirements higher, and it's very hard for many of the people to compete under these new requirements, whereas in the past they were able to compete. And because of the caliber of people that are being let go in the military professions throughout the world, it's harder for people with maybe not as high qualifications that are living in rural areas to compete. And, you know, I think that gives concern to me that maybe we're not doing enough in the area of assisting people and training them so that Alaskans can get the positions.
Let me say, first of all, I agree with you about the increasing qualification requirements, that it exists, which is mandated from the federal level, not from the state level. The hiring requirements and qualifications have been changing the last 2 or 3 years. It is a reflection of the downsizing of the military in general and the ability to be able to recruit people with higher qualifications. What are we doing about it? I've got a list of things that I will provide to you, but it runs from beefing up our capability to provide the appropriate military education at our Alaska Military Academy, which is located at Fort Richardson, so that people will have those kind of requirements out of the way when one of these positions come open. If we go down to the point of where we're trying to seek better qualified people to the level of people coming into the National Guard, we are working with 4 rural area high schools to institute junior ROTC programs to provide those youngsters the ability to graduate from high school with a diploma, which is required now in the Guard, and hopefully get their interest in the National Guard. We also were able to, just in the last year, to institute a scholarship program at the University of Alaska. We have an officer from your district that is completing his degree requirements so he can progress up the ladder within the National Guard. We are working with the University of Alaska to set up a college ROTC program at Bethel. In fact, we went out this last year and beat the bushes to try to get some people into that, and unfortunately we were only able to get one person into that program. But those are some of the examples of our realization that this is a problem, and we've got to provide more opportunity for people, especially in rural areas, to compete for these positions. And as you'll notice in the handout there, one of the main objectives of the 8 that I list there just hits right on the nose what you're talking about that needs to be done.
Well, thank you, Colonel. I guess I will like to discuss it with Representative Foster, because they've said that they would like to address this session. People that have been in the Guard for in excess of 20 years in rural Alaska, and they feel that the changes are moving too fast, and the department is not giving adequate attention for upward mobility and training, particularly of Alaska Native people that have been in the Guard.
I'll be glad, Mr. Chairman, to talk with you or anybody else on that. And as I say, I've got a handout here that you don't have, but it talks specifically about our realization now for a number of months, in fact a couple of years, that this is a problem and what we're trying to do about it.
Thank you. Representative Terrio?
I just wanted to make a comment to Representative Martin about the 470 funds. I think since in DEC, what we're trying to do is look at and evaluate the expenditure of 470 funds to see what's appropriate and what is not. And so in addition, we want to 470 funds that get funneled into other agencies, we want to look at to see whether that expenditure from the 470 fund is appropriate or not. So I'm not real familiar on what's driving these specific numbers, but it looks like, or appears to me, that it's a step in the right direction. All disaster planning in the state of Alaska shouldn't be funded from 470 funds. But, you know, there has been a history of you look to the best cash cow. And for a while, that's the way I feel that 474 is treated. So, you know, I'll try and, you know, work with the department and the DEC personnel that, you know, make the decision now on what funds are channeled through to, you know, evaluate what change is being made here to the 474 expenditures.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, on that point.
Representative Martin?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Mr. Centurio on that and watching that 470 because we have had a lot of misuse of it. But I don't believe agency, and it has nothing to do with this agency, but other agencies can say, well, gee, we did this, we got it in place now, you're just going to let us drop it, we need general fund monies, when we wouldn't approve general fund monies in the first place for whatever they're doing. So it's on you, I agree, to decide. But we need more information perhaps from you when someone's saying they're replacing 470 funds from your committee's look and say, you know, it wasn't used anyway.
Well, I'm sure the 470 funds are going to get a thorough overview this year because I believe we even have legislation in regards to.
But I think it's important now that if we've taken a section out of the disaster planning and moved it into general fund, then now it comes under, it'll fall under the scrutiny of the that subcommittee.
Yeah.
Because we've got a constriction on the available general fund. So, you know, now we're going to have to really look at whether this transfer to general fund is something that we want to cover.
Okay. Jeff, we kind of diverted from...
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I've lost my finger.
Okay, of course, so.
There's only two other increments that I haven't addressed yet. First is an increment of $150,000 to increase Army Guard facilities maintenance. This was actually in keeping with the move towards increased efficiency, as you may recall from a letter that General Cotts just wrote to you and Co-Chairman McClain. One of the recommendations of the Governor's efficiency study was to fund maintenance properly and adequately, and this gets us towards that direction. It's still not a completely adequate maintenance budget, but the long-term impacts of this would be to hopefully reduce the deterioration of the facilities. And then the final increment is a federally funded increment for four new firefighter positions at Culis Air National Guard Base. This is an item that has been established by a revised program in this fiscal year, and we're getting ready to fill those positions very shortly. Anyway, the bottom line matches the numbers in the short form book that you've got. The next page is a position summary information. This is information that was requested specifically by the Senate Finance Committee, and we thought that we would pass this on to you too, since there's a lot of just general information in this. This tracks the position count from FY94 to FY95. We start off this year with 143. We have four new full-time positions for Culis, which I just alluded to. And then we are creating within the budget four additional maintenance positions at Eielson. This is a transfer from contractual services into personal services in order to reflect the changing nature of the facilities at Eielson. They previously were rented and contracted from the Air Force base there, but now we've gotten some brand new federally funded construction of National Guard facilities up there, and we need to maintain them with our own personnel. The second column on there reflects those non-permanent positions that would be CIP funded. You'd asked in your letter about the effect on the hiring freeze, and we're really only 6 or 7 weeks into the hiring freeze now. We currently have 9 vacant positions in the department, but only one of those positions has no federal funding, is purely general funds. All the other 8 positions have federal funds involved to one degree or another, some 100%, some 50%. And then there's a summary there of position layoffs during the fiscal year. The next page is something that is part or will be part of our budget, but you do not have before you yet, because this is going to be something we'll be submitting as a budget amendment for these next two items.
the National Guard Youth Corps Challenge Program, and the King Salmon Air Base operations. Some of you may know, I think it was announced on the floor today, we're having a special briefing for the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee this afternoon at 5 o'clock in the Governor's Conference Room to go in detail over both of these. Both of these programs are 100% federally funded programs, and they'll be taken on with the challenge program actually starts with its first class next Sunday, and we've been gearing up for several months on that. The King Salmon Air Base operations, we're going to be taking that over for the U.S. Air Force, and that'll be a 100% federally funded contract. That is still in negotiations as far as the dollar amount, so we really don't have any firm dollar amounts to peg on either of these, but we will be submitting a budget amendment for your consideration, 100% federally funded items.
Okay, any questions of Mr. Morrison? Do we have any other questions of General Cox or Mr.
Yes.
Martin or Mr. Morrison? Representative Martin?
Yes, thank you, sir. General, last year you took a lot of heat on some of the necessary shifting we needed to do, and I think that shifting the money to the Veterans Service Corps has paid off, and it seems like they're happy about that. But however, I still hear complaints about the Veterans Affairs Office, and I just leave it up to you to see if that was valuable. Some of the veterans areas are still pushing for that position and staff, and I'm not making any commitment at all.
Yes.
I just want to know, how do you feel now after 1 year with that deleted from your office? Have we been able to fill in the gap for information and things like that?
Mr. Chairman, to refresh your memory, that was deleted in last year's budget, the position of director, as well as the secretarial position. Those were the two total numbers of people we had working in Veterans Affairs for the state in my department. What I did, at the concern of the governor, as well as the individual veterans and veteran service organizations, was my deputy commissioner, my assistant commissioner, has taken over those responsibilities in addition to running the entire staff. And his secretary, as I say, we deleted the secretarial position last year as well, and his secretary is handling things like the phone calls, of which we get on the order of 20 to 25 phone calls a day to refer, mainly to refer veterans to veteran service officers, which are the grant program that you funded for the last few years. My overall estimation is that considering what the people that were in those positions in the past did, that we are adequately covering the veterans programs at this point in time. I would say that I think the veterans feel like that they were slighted as a result of the deletion of that program. They think that there ought to be a dedicated person fulfilling that single point of contact in the state for Veterans Affairs, and I understand that. But we have coped with it in the interim, and that's about all I'd have to say on it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think it's still just one or two people that would like to have that job and wave the flag. So, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? General Irv and Jeff, we thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And next, then, we will hear from the Department of Revenue, Commissioner Rex Winkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. $1 a barrel today.
Hey, shut up.
You know, Mr. Chairman, maybe it was someplace in this world. I wouldn't deny it.
In Nome.
Yeah.
Yeah. $100, isn't it?
But if you've noticed, prices at the pump are going down here in Juneau. I don't know if that's anticipation of a new station opening.
No competition, huh?
Are the crude oil prices going down?
We
You ready?
Ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Darrell Rexwinkle, Commissioner, Department of Revenue. And you should have all been provided with this in Ross's already, and if not, we do have some originals that we're handing out. Sorry, but I don't know, sometimes, you know, like last year we printed 100, and we wound up with about 20-some of these left over, and this year we printed 100, and we're already out. So I'm not sure what happens, but I think sometimes they get chewed up by the system.
Paying attention to what you're doing.
In order to try to conserve paperwork, we only printed 100. It's not enough to do any other handouts or anything like that, because otherwise we all get too much paper distributed, and this would be one document that we can all look at. If we go through here, there's a table of contents. You asked for about a 15-minute presentation. I'll go through this pretty briefly. We've already gone through the Finance Subcommittee with some of this information, so for some of you it would be a repeat, but we'll go through it again. On page 5, there's an agency overview. On page 6, there are some changes to the general fund component, whether it's a general fund match, general fund, or general fund program receipts. As you can see, part of this is due to some one-time items, a negative $20,000. Personal services adjustments, that's due to the health care cost. That gets it up to 80. That increases about $80,400. We have some net increments and decrements, and we'll go through these when we get into the individual sections. $220,800 to give a total change from FY94, that's FY94 authorized, to FY95 of $281,200. Page 8 is an organization chart. The various divisions within the department are listed with a solid line reporting up through the commissioner. That's income and excise audit, oil and gas audit, treasury division, administrative services, charitable gaming, child support enforcement, and permanent fund dividend. And then the attached corporations and authorities that are within the Department of Revenue would be the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They have their own executive director and board. Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority with its own executive director and board. Alaska State Pension Investment Board, which is its own board, and Department of Revenue acts as staff to that board. The Permanent Fund Corporation with its own executive director and board. Alaska Science and Technology Foundation has executive director and board, and Alcoholic Beverage Control Board has its executive director. On page 9, comparison, and from that well shows 3 or 4 years there. We start out with FY92 final authorized, FY93 final authorized, FY94 authorized, and FY95 agency request. The total there is $96,460,900. That number does not agree with the booklet that's put out by Legislative Finance, which is a purple colored book. And the only two amounts, and there's two reasons that it does not agree. We have $265,000 in the front section of the budget requested, the same as last year for litigation support for oil and gas audit, income and excise audit. And also the shared taxes program of $19,085, which is general fund money. Excuse me, $19,085,000, which is general fund money. And if we add those to the $96,460,900, it brings us up to the total reported in the purple book from Legislative Finance. We'll go through the funding sources, if you don't mind, just to get an overview of some of the more significant changes. In federal funds, there was a big increase there from $6 million all the way up to $25 million. Some of that was for Child Support Enforcement Division, and the rest was for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. When the merger bill took place with ASHA and AHFC, that's the old Alaska State Housing Authority. Alaska State Housing Authority was not subject to the Executive Budget Act, and there's a two-year moratorium. And FY95 is the first year that the old ASHA operations, which are now public, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation needs to be shown in the Executive Budget Act. So that's the major increase there. The next major change, we go down to IA receipts, interagency receipts. It goes from $1,253,000 to $2,639,000. That has to do with Alaska State Pension Investment Board, which began this year, July 1, 1993, and this is to break it out for FY95 into the entity that it is, and that's a separate board.
So is what happens, the staff is reported in Treasury Division, and a lot of the staff is paid for out of interagency receipts to the Pension Investment Board. So that's why the increase there in the interagency receipts. Moving on down to federal incentives, that number increased from 981 to 1,705,000. That's all child support enforcement. Right below that is this deferred comp, 148,000. That's a new one in there. That's related to the Alaska State Pension Investment Board because they were given authority to oversee the investments of the deferred compensation program. And then we see under corporation receipts a significant decrease from 31,133,000 down to 20,655,000. And that's because for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, the amounts that they pay for money management fees were taken out of the budget and placed in the front section. And see, the next significant change, I guess there are no more real significant changes. On the positions, there's some position changes, and on the next page, page 10, we've reconciled out the position changes. Starting out with the position detail for FY94, adjustments by revised program, the big change there was in Child Support Enforcement Division and one position for the Permanent Fund Corporation. That brings us up to a new adjusted base. And then there was a transfer within the adjusted base. And as what the transfer represents is an Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is splitting out the rural operations from Alaska Housing Finance, and the rural would be the old component that used to be in Community and Regional Affairs, and breaking that out into a separate budget component. And then, once again, there's a large increase in personnel associated with bringing the old ASHA, or what's now called public housing, into the Executive Budget Act. Charitable gaming, there's one new position, that's for an analyst programmer position. And then Permanent Fund Dividend Division has requested basically four temporary positions to help with the microfilming project, which is has been requested as a capital project request also. Pages 12, 13, and 14 discusses some of the...
We have a question, Representative Henry.
Commissioner Rector, on the positions, you know, when we merge all these entities together in the housing area, is there any idea of the... I mean, was there a net increase, decrease? Was it the same? I mean, when we brought all these positions together, do we have, I mean, because you can't tell from, were there 133 people working in public before? I mean, what was, do you have any idea what the net impact was?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, no, I do not know if there's been an increase in the meantime. We can certainly find out and report back to you.
Yeah, it's not correct. It's just to get a feel, because there's so much going in and people changing and everything. Maybe we get a real rough rundown of the number of positions in all those areas before, how many after they merged, and then where they are today now that they've had a year to go through that.
We can certainly do that.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Representative Martin.
Thanks. On that point, I think generally there's been a 22 body decrease with the merger of ASTA. But I still, and I have next commission, I was going to wait later. We need to know where those bodies are. Are they now state employees? Are they now federal employees? What was the combination of it? And this is where I'm afraid that we've increased 200 and some employees rather than leave them where they are. And you couldn't leave them where they are. They weren't federal employees. But I don't think that question's been answered yet when we absorb ASTA into Alaska Housing Corporation. Are they state employees or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, I believe they've always been state employees. It's just that they were paid for with federal funds.
But there was a difference. Okay.
Yeah, the ASHA employees were state employees. The old Alaska State Housing Authority.
What about Alaska Housing Corporation people?
They were state employees also.
Then we've increased. It wasn't supposed to be that.
I believe. I mean, but we will get that information.
There is a footnote there. It says footnote number three. of 41 positions transferred to AHFC operations from Community and Regional Affairs had, 33 are being transferred to rural housing. Budgetary cuts eliminate 3 of the 41 positions, while 5 remain in AHFC operations. So.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that relates to the former HAD operations, yes. But I don't know what's been told or if there's been any other changes, and I think that was the broader question. But
Yeah, it was.
Okay, next page.
Pages 12, 13, and 14 discuss some issues for the Department of Revenue, and I think we've probably all been through most of these issues, and I won't go through them again. Somebody has some specific questions. And then on page 17, this section of the document here gets us into what I would call the operations, really, of the Department of Revenue. This excludes the boards and commissions and authorities and shared taxes program and gets into the ones that are really under the Commissioner of Revenue directly.
Mr. Chairman, before we go into the budget summary, can we go back to the science and tech? Why is there such an increase in for fiscal year authorized in FY 95 agency request? It's on page 9. Sorry.
Chairman McLean, science and technology increased from $9,603,000 to $9,789,000.
Mm-hmm. I think I have the answer. If I remember correctly, in 93 is when they were getting the science and tech more or less built up, and the number of grants that they gave out were relatively about half of the total monies that they had. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Chairman McLean, we'll see that when we get to page 67. That shows it broken down in some more detail.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, back to page 17.
If we can, that's the total of the operations components. And if we move on to page 21, we'll start with the first one, and that's child support enforcement. Child support enforcement, we see a substantial increase from FY 94 to FY 95 request, and that's basically a continuation of what we implemented this year as a result of an RPL program. And really is what that does is adds 26 full-time and 16 part-time positions to the budget to help bring Child Support Enforcement Division up to what we might call somewhat adequate staffing levels. And the temporary positions are to help us work our way out of the deficient position that we're in right now. Might add this program is basically fully paid for with, and here we get into these federal monies, both federal funds and federal incentive monies. And the federal incentive monies are based on the amounts that are collected by Child Support Enforcement Division.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hoffman.
Where are these positions being placed at?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hoffman, Child Support Enforcement, with the exception of two people, we're 100% located in an Anchorage office. There's one position in Fairbanks and one position in Juneau. The federal child support requirements are that if you have an office, you have a full-service office. And a full-service office contemplates more than one position. But we gain a lot of efficiencies by having one office. And having everybody located in that office. We've looked at our caseload, we've looked at the amount of contact that we have, and we have considerable contact in the Fairbanks area and areas that are accessible to Fairbanks. And And in implementing these additional positions, we're considering increasing the size of the Fairbanks office.
Next.
I guess also with respect to child support enforcement, I might just add that for last year we brought in about $50 million. And considering that we do paternity establishments and set up the cases, do review and modifications, do locate, interstate, and all that, it comes out to be about a 12.5% cost, just to kind of put a little bit of perspective. Next is income and excise.
I notice we do have a bill. I think that the Finance Committee now is the identification of paternities.
We believe now that we do have tools that we currently need to comply with those requirements. It would be helpful, but we believe that we have all the tools currently in place to do that. We also have another bill out there. That's the Uniform Interstate Support Act. We will have it.
Okay. Representative Terrio?
Just a constituent this week. Kirby, can you tell me if it's federal requirements or state that for hardship cases, the parent only has to give $50 to care of the child. I'm wondering if that's derived in state statute or federal.
It's not state statute. Generally, it's based on a court award, and otherwise, it's based on an income determination as to the amount that's due. You could provide us with the specifics, we'd be more than happy to get back to you on that.
Representative Martin?
One of the things that I think that unknown, and maybe I'm misguided too, but I thought that the department had the opportunity when there's hardship cases, when someone loses a job, that they can have these things adjusted. And that the, you know, we're just not going to lock them in jail because they lost their job this month and can't pay the benefits. Is that not so?
That's, Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, yes. That's the review and modification function. And that's one of the functions that we're trying to bring more current so that we can provide people with relief in those instances where perhaps they lose their job or have some other unfortunate situation occur, that there can be some adjustment in the amount of child support that they're paying. Because until it does get modified, they're liable to, or they're subject to paying the old amount.
I think that's one of the points of weakness that maybe people who do work don't understand, and that maybe when they get injured or they lose their job, no use in running away to let the department know that you do have, you're not going to hang them. But they feel you guys are going to chop their head off.
Tongue-in-cheek, Representative Martin, but do you know if they hadn't thrown him in jail during Columbus's time, he wouldn't have had enough sailors to make his voyage?
You would know that. I didn't have any personal knowledge of that.
Commissioner Rexwing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Page 23 is Income and Excise Audit Division. We've proposed no changes to that from what we had last year. Same with the next page on, it's not quite the same on, that's charitable gain, but on Income and Excise Audit, the same as Oil and Gas Audit Division. We're proposing no new increases. It means basically a slight reduction in the capabilities of the program, of course, because we are going to absorb any inflationary increases or step increases within the employee's compensation. The next page is charitable gaming, and there's an increase of one person there for an analyst programmer and to provide full funding for all the other positions. The total request would amount then to $1,163.8. And we anticipate also for FY95 that we will collect in program receipt monies, that's for permit fees and what have you, $1,666,000. So out of the $1,666,000, we request that we be able to spend $1,163.8.
Oil and gas audit, we've already touched on that one, and that's just a continuation of where we were last year, except for that increase for that employee health. Treasury management, there's a big change here in treasury management, and the reason for the big change is that we're splitting out that Alaska State Pension Investment Board component and showing all the contractual fees in that budget component, and that's shown in the back section here, and that would be for money management fees, custodial fees, consultant fees. And as you can see, when we come down into the funding sources, you'll see down there on page 29 that funding source 1029, which is public employees all the way down through teachers, judicial, and military, that there's zero funding for FY95, and that's because the funding moved over into the new board. Page 31 and page 33 is the commissioner's office, and we're proposing no changes also for these two components. Most of what's in the commissioner's office, if you see the organization chart, is for the hearing section. We have a senior hearing officer and two other hearing officers, a paralegal and a clerk typist in that component. Page 35, administrative services. We're requesting the same level of funding as for FY94 in this component. We talked quite a bit last year about this component. We're down out of 19 positions from what we had at FY92 of 22 and one part-time. And we've had some significant declines in this division. Page 37, permanent fund dividend division. Slight increase, and most of that is associated with the microfilming project. Then the next three pages there show some statutory sites. Page 43 shows the shared taxes budget summary. It's a general fund component also. That's all general fund. And then on 47 is a summary of all the boards, commissions, and authorities. And page 49 is the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Can we go back to the budget summary, page 47? What is this $1.1 million for lands and buildings under the budget summary?
Chairman McLean, I would assume that that's Alaska Housing Finance. I would have to check that, though, which I'll be happy to do. But
okay, would you
I'm
please?
I'm sorry, that's a good question. Yes. We may even see it when we get into here. I don't know what else it could be other than the HSC. Okay.
You saved us 1.7.
Okay, we're going to have to kind of wrap up the presentation.
Okay. Page 49, Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. There's an increase of one personnel component being requested, and that's for clerical support to support the investigative function, to help them do their job so they don't be doing clerical work and they can be out in the field doing their support work. Municipal Bond Bank Authority, that's pretty much a continuation budget there also. No new staff being requested. They do return money to the state. They've returned about $1 million a year for the past several years. Permanent Fund Corporation, page 53. Once again, we're showing the significant reduction in contractual because that money's been moved out of there and into the front section. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, page 57. This would be the operations side of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Page 59 shows the new rural housing component, the breakout there. And the on the opposite pages, we have the organization charts of all the functions. And then page 65 would be the summary for, and here it is, Chairman McLean, of the old ASHA, which is the public housing component, which up there, if you see under the budgetary items is the lands and buildings of $1,176.1. in Alaska Science and Technology Foundation on page 67. Back in FY93 under grants, it was about $3.7 million. And then in FY94, that increased to $8.5 million. It's carried over into FY95 at $8.5 million. So that's been the significant increase in their budget is in the grants. And that's grants to the third parties for science and technology type projects. And then on page 69, finally, is this Alaska State Pension Investment Board. And this shows the funding request for that. And this is a breakout from what used to be in the Treasury Division. There's really nothing new added. And when I say really, I don't think there is anything new. It's just a continuation.
Okay, Representative Martin.
Just one quickie. So I'm going to go back to, you don't need to answer now, page 47. Could you give us a list of the grants that have been approved by the board this year here? You know, last year we had problems with the legislature not knowing what grants were being given and why, and sometimes we think that's our authority.
Those are for science and technology?
No, sir. Well, that's one problem, but I'm looking on page 47, your budgetary summaries, the grants that are given there for various reasons.
Okay, and most of that would be science and technology. There's something else.
Is that what that is? Because over here, I had that marked too. Now, officially, talk about forestry and BIDCO. We can knock that down. I didn't think BIDCO was approved to the governor cut that back, and it looks like you're carrying it at $3 million again.
And you wanted to see the specific grants?
Later on, yes.
Pardon me?
Later on, yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, any other questions to ask the commission?
Oh, I'm sorry. The other component of grants would have been Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for $250,000. Remember, there was some discussion about that in prior years, the grants by Alaska Housing for emergency housing needs and what have you. In FY93, that was $1.4 million, and FY94 is down to $950,000, and in FY95, we're down to $250,000. We're trying to ratchet that down.
Other questions? If not, Commissioner, we thank you very much for the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have one question.
Oh, Representative Navarro.
Never mind, I'll take it up later. Thanks.
Okay, we only have about 15 minutes left in the meeting today. One day last week, we left off as committee substitute for House Bill 18. That was an act relating to police protection service areas and municipalities by Representative Bundy. But this time I want to bring that bill back before the committee. And Representative Bundy is here. So Representative Bundy, if you'd come up and bring whoever you'd like at the table with you. We are now in the portion of our discussion on any questions by members of the committee. Any members of the committee have any questions in regards to this? As I understand it, that this bill would allow for the creation of a service area. That service area would then determine what level of service it wanted. That level of service would be costed out by the municipality of Anchorage. Anchorage would then assess the taxes to collect that amount of money, and then the contracts would be negotiated with the state troopers, and this municipality of Anchorage would then turn that money over to the troopers to carry out the service. Is that correct?
No. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Parnell.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bundy, this is broader than the municipality of Anchorage, isn't it?
Well, that is a scenario that could take place, but it is not limited to simply municipality of Anchorage. For instance, the Anderson on the highway up, they have lost their trooper, and I've recently spoken with representatives of their municipality who have some interest in taking advantage of a bill like this.
So let me see if my understanding of the next part is correct. In regards to the fiscal notes, those fiscal notes now represent what the potential costs could be to provide that service at the level of service that's anticipated to be provided by the 29 personnel. In regards to the actual fiscal note itself, if I understand you correctly, that the total amount would be determined after the service area has determined what level of service they want. And we have also heard then that it would be approximately 18 months before the necessary officers could be trained to be available to provide the service, so that other areas of the state would not lose the protection they have now. Am I still on track with the testimony we have heard so far? Okay, then I believe that's where we left off at the last time we had our meeting. Representative Brown.
Thank you. Is any money being expended now by the Department of Public Safety in providing service to this area or other municipalities for that matter?
The basic level, through the chair, the basic level of service that's available to all citizens of the state is expended, but they are not adding additional services to the hillside for traditional policing activities. If there is a major injury accident on Highway to Wasilla, they would work that. If there's one on Rabbit Creek, they would work that. But as far as answering calls for additional level of service, no.
And then this, there would be no cost to the state from this proposal. Is that correct?
Again, through the chair, I think I'm quoting Mr. Swackheimer accurately when he said at our last meeting that the net result would be a zero fiscal note.
Thank you.
Further questions of Representative Bundy? Representative Navarre?
Zero fiscal note because it's going to be recovered from the municipality?
Be recovered, if I may, it would be recovered from the area that requests the service, whether it be a portion of a municipality or some other organized area.
And is the main thrust of this because the hillside does not want the Anchorage Police Department to provide the coverage? They like the trooper coverage? Or is it expected to be cheaper if they go this way? Or?
I think the answer to both statements would be a qualified yes. It is the level of service that existed before the troopers withdrew, and the quality of service that was available before the troopers withdrew has been a major factor in the discussions on the hillside. I can't speak for other areas and why they would prefer troopers, but I assume it would be cheaper to begin with an organized law enforcement agency than to start another of their own.
Mr. Chairman, if you extrapolate out a little bit, this could in fact become a fairly significant problem in terms of logistics for law enforcement if you have little different areas, pockets around a community, such as Anchorage, a hillside on one side, maybe Mountain View on the other side, maybe West Anchorage, however you want to separate it out, opt to get out of the police protection from the city of Anchorage and pay for it themselves through a contract with the troopers, which I think this would allow.
If I might, no. In order for an area of a municipality to opt out, there has to be some municipal mechanism for that, and that doesn't exist. No. This is for additional service over what you have now. It's not to reduce services that exist. The hillside is in a particularly unique relationship with the municipality in that the covenants when the hillside joined the municipality included local service. West Anchorage, Mountain View, whatever, that they did not have those particular covenants involved, and so no, there's no municipal mechanism where we would balkanize the rest of the Anchorage area.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there are two statements that I'd like to make. One, doesn't this fall into the constitutional problem in addressing the hillside area? Because we're talking about tax base versus no tax base. And the other thing is that we have a task force that is made up of the House and Senate on the police protection, and we had recommended that that in fact to make changes in Title 29 to permit assemblies of unified municipalities and home rule boroughs to establish service areas for police protection. How would this differ from your bill?
We were just looking at Title 29. If I reintroduce my aide, Patty Swenson, who has done that research for me.
Patty?
According to Title 10, Section 5 of the Constitution, as long as an area is looking for a different level of service than that which is provided, they're within constitutional bounds. And this particular bill would amend Title 29 and supersede anything else that is there. And I believe you have a memo from Tam Cook in your packet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A general question that I would have is that, and I'm going back to some discussion we had in regards to Wasilla in the past, that the type of protection that, say, local police force performs and the type of protection that state troopers perform oftentimes are different or at least carried out to a different degree. For an example, in Wasilla, the city police will go around and check a business door to see if it's open, enforce animal control, parking regulations, and so forth. Or the state troopers would respond to the major felony type crimes and so forth. Now, I would assume that the service area that would be formed on the hillside in providing a contract for services from troopers would be contracting for traditional type trooper services and not the type of city police services. Would that be correct?
That's a fair assumption, and I would like to add the reminder that it wouldn't apply just to the hillside, but any of the areas such as Wasilla that wanted additional services over their animal control.
Well, which of those trooper services would you get then that you don't already have?
They do not respond to crimes. Burglary, armed assault, that sort of thing, they're not responding to calls.
Okay. Representative Henley?
Well, maybe Mr. Schweiker can answer this, because that's not my understanding, is that they don't, I mean, I understood that they did, if there's an assault, that they do respond. That's a question of a matter of time and how many officers they have. Mr. Swackhammer, the statement was made that the troopers do not respond to burglaries or assaults on the hillside. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman,
Could you pull up a chair, please, sir? Thank you.
There are the policy for hillside basically is to respond to life-threatening situations. For instance, burglaries, that there is no suspect in the residence or any nature that would cause someone's life to be endangered. They're just basically taking a report.
Further questions, Representative
Hanley? Yeah, for the sponsor of the bill, I just want to... I assume that if an area chooses whatever level they choose, it is your intent that that suffices for the constitutional requirement for the state troopers to... I mean, the troopers are not going to have to go in and decide, now that this area has decided what level of service they...